Hi, welcome to my podcast. I'm Dr. Lauren Goodall. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this is Psychology in Short. Okay, today's topic, I had to think about for a bit. I wasn't clear which direction I wanted, but this kept coming back in so many different formats that I said, now, this is the topic. And I've seen it done quite a few times, and that's the why I said, I don't know. It's all been done before. And then I decided, as I thought about it more and more, that I had some other pieces to add to the equation. And so with that, I'm talking about trauma, okay? And most people recognize trauma in terms of, say, military and post-traumatic stress disorder. People seem to recognize it from that venue. People who go through military situations and what they experience after going through those situations are a lot of startle responses, nightmares, flashbacks, all sorts of horrible psychological trauma. But it really is the brain responding to psychological trauma. So there is a biological basis that fuels this condition. And so, you know, when we think about people who are in military situations, what are they in? They're in survival mode, okay? They are in life and death situations. So it does make sense that the survival mode of the brain would get kicked in. Okay, and the problem is with post-traumatic stress disorder, it just doesn't stop kicking in. It's kind of what we call a kindling effect. It's like if you shoot it once or shoot it twice, then it starts to do it all by itself. And that's not a good thing. And so that is just one example of trauma. But I wanted to start off with something that people would recognize and be familiar with. But trauma can come through a variety of experiences that overwhelm the psyche and the human condition, okay? You can get it, we talk about an acute experience as a single event, okay? So you could be in a natural disaster. You could be sexually assaulted. You could be physically assaulted. Those are just some forms of trauma that can trigger these events, okay? So I'm going to talk a little bit about what trauma is biologically and psychologically, and I'm going to talk about other forms of trauma that are just as valid, and yet yet gets under-recognized, okay? Because it's not as visible. So at the current stats that I've read is that 61% of men at some point in their life are going to experience a traumatic event. And they said 51% of women will experience one traumatic event in their life. And I think those stats are from the Substance Abuse Records Archives. And so when I hear these statistics, I'm saying, okay, that's very sizable, because at the end of the day, we're saying, you know, a huge percentage of the population is going to have at least one traumatic event in their lifetime. However, what we have to take into consider is so many people have traumas that will never be reported. Okay, so we're starting to look at much higher numbers than probably that is what I would anticipate. So that gives us a baseline to say it can happen to you. But I'm saying there are other forms of trauma that can increase that likelihood. So those statistics are probably baseline and we go up from there. Okay, so, you know, what happens with trauma? Okay, So there's two different types, you know, there's the, at least categorically, there's the acute, the single event. Okay, you go through one horrific type of experience that affects the psyche so profoundly that traumatic responses ensue. Like I said, natural disasters, sexual assault, physical battery, physical assault, all sorts of things can trigger a traumatic response. And what biochemically is going on? And so there, when trauma ensues, there is what happens is, as part of your brain that regulates the fight or flight mechanism, we call it the amygdala, okay? Its job is to give you enough energy, enough oxygen to do whatever it is that you need to do to get through this experience, okay? So it's very adaptive. If somebody is trying to mug you and chase you down an alley, that all of a sudden you get this supercharged energy, okay? But the brain always says, in its own right, it's like, okay, I'm going to give you the energy. You're going to be able to zip through this like you've never zipped before. However, don't plan on thinking too much through this process, because I'm shutting down those regions. Okay, so people who are exposed to traumatic events, sometimes the questions that come up are, well, you know, why did you do X or why did you do Y? Thinking actually and reasoning goes into a much secondary, tertiary position, okay? There wasn't time to think. So reasoning just is not going to be stellar, okay? Survival is first and foremost, and the body is pushing that entire equation. Digestion, side processes, things like other pieces just get shut down. But the thinking, reasoning part of the brain just isn't up to the job at this point, okay? Why? Because there's too much adrenaline shooting through this body that you just have to get through this initial situation. And then as the adrenaline tapers off, the other processes kind of roll back in, okay? But that's why you see people who may experience trauma, their attention span gets wild, okay? Because they're very distracted. The word is hypervigilant, okay? If you've been in a very traumatic situation, okay? Say a natural disaster. You're going to notice things, okay? If you know, sights, sounds. You know, if you're ever in a really bad storm. Smells, sounds. Okay, so there's a lot of different things that will get your attention and can trigger a traumatic response. So with that, we have to take into account that there's a lot of different brain networks that bring up associations that can bring on a traumatic response. Like I said, it could be a word, it could be a movement. Somebody moves fast, you know, if you were in the military, boom, you know, the response there. Frontline responders, they experience a ton of trauma. Police officers, tons of trauma. Not only by what you physically see, but the actions surrounding the event also get categorized in there. So there's a lot of what I would say neural, which is brain cell and branching and synapses is when connections are being made. We call that synapses that go from one cell to the next, where it says, okay, we can connect this with this with this. Okay, so all of these different pieces can come together to form a traumatic response. And so when we look at things that decline, we look at attention span and distractibility and hypervigilance, and some people report numbing, where they just kind of freeze, okay? So those are some of the looks of it. People get flashbacks. They can actually get intrusive thoughts, okay? But keep in mind, there's a variety of sources. When you've gone through a traumatic event, you are organizing all that different information. That data is all getting organized, downloaded, Okay? So lots of spaces to have, create trauma from one event. Okay, so I said there's acute trauma, which is single event, and then there's complex trauma. And complex trauma is really when you have a traumatic experience and it rolls off of a previous experience. And it gets a lot of bad momentum because it has some parallels with a previous experience. And yet, okay, so these are the basic categorizations of trauma. And I'm also going to talk about some other traumas and as we go along. But there's the active trauma, the military, the molestation, the assault, the life or death situations. But there's also very powerful traumas that are passive. And they take place, and they're more subtle, but they're continuous. And they're problematic because they're continuous. Okay? For instance, if you live in a household with a sibling that's out of control, and that sibling is not managed, you know, I'm talking about physically out of control. I've heard many, unfortunately, stories in my career where, you know, parents are like, you know, isn't that just sibling rivalry? I'm like, no. Okay. One child becomes very competitive with the other. I mean, they take emotional abuse to a new level. They can also become physically abusive. I've also seen situations where there is a developmental disorder, say autism, where the child really has great physical strength and unknowingly harms other siblings, you know. So in any of those situations, a child can actually develop trauma from living in their own home if they're not protected from emotional neglect, physical abuse. Even if it comes by if it happens through a competitive sibling, it's still physical abuse. Okay, it's not cute, it's not funny, and no, they'll grow out of it, or we'll just let boys be boys. No, I'm not a fan of that, okay? They just need to figure it out amongst themselves. No, they don't. They need an adult intervention. And when parents, for whatever reason, do not attend or see that as a threat, you know, a lot of bad things can happen from there. But one of those bad things is childhood trauma. Other things, and I'm just using these as examples of, and these are the slow brewers, but they could still build trauma, and that is, your voice doesn't matter, okay? What you say does not matter in that household. Feeling left out. Kids who are, you know, constantly put to the side, either for their looks or their lack of ability, lack of athletic ability, or what have you, over time, situations can build into trauma. And these are not things that people immediately think of trauma about, but they do happen, and so we need to be aware of it. Having a lack of emotional validation in your environment. When nobody's got your back and you don't feel that emotional support, that becomes a form of trauma. Constant comparison to others in a competitive way. Well, you know, your cousin Susie, she gets straight A's. I don't understand why you can't. Again, insults to your physical appearance. Well, you know, you might, you know, you're not going to be a runway model, so we might as well come up with other things for you to do. Okay? Those are insults, and they are attacks on people's self-esteem. And over time, those types of attacks can build into trauma. Okay? Now, I thought this was interesting in terms of trauma, in the sense that it can be passed down. And it could be passed down intergenerationally, okay? That means that in utero, so a mother who is stressed out, I mean, we've always heard this, don't upset a woman who's pregnant, because in utero, it affects the child. It affects the child in their biochemistry, okay? And what's happening and what's not happening in utero. So even if it never happens to you per se, but it happened to your mom, now you get a marking, a chemical mark. Okay, there's this article, and it's called "Can Trauma Be Passed Down from One Generation to the Next?" And it's by Karina Margit Erdely. And the article is called "Trauma Can Leave a Chemical Mark." Well, actually, this is the quote. "Trauma can leave a chemical mark on a person's genes, which can be passed down to future generations." Okay. And they start talking about genetic DNA. Okay. So the blueprint of your life is supposed to look like X, Y, and Z. You're supposed to have a certain height, a certain weight. However, now you're exposed to trauma of poverty. And what happens then is this DNA now gets altered too. Okay. And the epigenetics governs the switch. Okay. It starts turning it. It operates like a light switch, and it starts turning off certain parts of your gene DNA that were actually healthy, and now they are not going to be. So it's pretty intricate stuff. First off, that you can actually acquire trauma in utero that can affect your DNA. And secondly, that there is this epigenetic switch that can start changing what you have that's good into something that, if you know, you could have a personality that is said to be more extroverted, but because of this intrusion of trauma, now you have a more fearful personality, you're more intimidated, you avoid people. Okay, so that can start to be happening through an intergenerational aspect of trauma. So it's really profound. Most of us, I think, tend to believe that you have to experience the trauma directly to get it, okay? And, you know, when we're talking about adrenaline, when the actual fight or flight response, which is a surge of adrenaline that's like lightning energy going through your body, and cortisol, too much adrenaline destroys the immune system. So you keep having this fight or flight response, and it keeps rekindling itself because there's these little subtle things in your environment that can start triggering it, whether it's a sight, whether it's a sound, whether it's a word, so there's different ways that a person can start experiencing trauma and activating it. The problem is as I said, that the cortisol, too much cortisol starts destroying your blood vessels. It leads to hypertension and also cardiovascular disease. Now, the cortisol equation, okay, because the two of them shoot together. Cortisol is that friend that looks like a friend, but really they're the friend that stabs you in the back. That's what cortisol is. And it helps you in short term through a traumatic event. But longer term exposure to trauma, cortisol does a lot of damage. Inflammation, autoimmune diseases. So this is where too much trauma, when we talk about stress trauma, too much trauma will break the body down. It will break the immune system down. Okay. So we have to be aware of, different types of trauma. There's people who have grief trauma, and technically they say, oh, that's, they call it little t. I'm saying, working with people with grief, there's no little t to it, okay? There are some types of grief that are huge and have been a form of trauma. The loss has been traumatic. It was a traumatic loss, and so that matters. People who are exposed to, I mean, people are aware of things like domestic violence and trauma. They're like, of course, we understand that. But people are exposed to chronic emotional abuse over time develop a trauma response, okay? Emotional abuse is one of those things that's just kind of a gray area all the time because of how it's defined and how people use it, quite honestly. There are people who kind of misuse it, and there's people who are really saying it for what it is, but over time will cause a trauma response. So there's different ways to get a trauma response, and now the question is, you know, how do these people act? You know, a person who has a traumatic experience or experiences, they avoid social experiences. They might exit earlier. They kind of run on an invisible radar. They're not looking to put themselves out there. They're not going to be super extroverted. They will just probably put the basics in to get by. And people with trauma have some types of trust issues. Okay, there's betrayal. And betrayal can come from an emotional end. It can come from a physical end. You know, as a child, physical neglect is a form of betrayal. Okay, not getting to the doctors, not getting them to the dentist, not taking care of physical conditions that they have. Then there's emotional neglect. Is when a parent is present, but they don't emotionally attend to what the child's needs are. There's social aspects of betrayal, where kids are not allowed social opportunities, the opportunity to be a kid, because they're dealing with parental issues, or where the parents' issues run the show. And they have some studies. I think there was some that kids who have rough childhoods develop smoking habits, drinking habits, not to be surprised, different types of, coping patterns that aren't good. But those are kids where a kid is not allowed to be a kid because they have to manage parent issues. You know, we're going to see a certain level of trauma go along with that. And also, you know, thinking about people who are bullied. We live in the day of social media bullying. That's really unfortunate, but it's a very real thing. And over time, bullying is a form of trauma. So we have to be aware of these different types of traumas and what it looks like, what a person might act like. And as I said, these people don't engage easily. They'll kind of do the bare minimum to try to get by and what have you. So the next question is, what can you do for a person? I'm going to back that up first. You know, there are so many disorders, for instance, like depression and suicide. And before a person becomes suicidal, you can actually see that there's some trauma. Trauma will cause a person to go suicidal. Okay, anxiety in and of itself, a form of trauma. Okay, fear on steroids is trauma. Okay, so anxiety has a basis of trauma. So understanding that trauma is really kind of hidden in a lot of our psychological conditions and recognizing it. And I saw this article on a woman who had battled decades, and she was from Canada, and she battled decades of an eating disorder. And it was so, so profound that, of course, she'd lost tremendous amounts of weight, and the tolls it had taken on her psychologically and physically, and she was requesting assistance, assisted suicide. And I had just read the article and was taken aback in the sense that it was just profoundly sad. I said, this woman has just experienced trauma due to this eating disorder that has taken over her life. So many times in psychology, we organize things from depression to anxiety. We don't understand that trauma is built into the mix. Okay, it really is. So, you know, when they say, hey, this person committed suicide, they died because of depression. No, they died because of depression and trauma. Okay, trauma is built into these equations. And what is trauma? Trauma, keep in mind, trauma is lack of choice and lack of voice. Okay? There are situations that people are put through and they're just trying to survive. And what can you do for these people? What, you know, how can you, people do heal from trauma. Okay, there's EMDR as a technique that professionals use, and they try to alter and process, desensitize and neutralize the trauma equation. And there's all different types of interventions based on neutralizing traumatic equations. But what can you do as a person, as somebody you see who looks kind of startled, has difficulty with attention span, so that sometimes they, you might just think they're hyper. But there may be a trauma associated with their response. People's behavior always makes sense, even if you don't understand it. So it's not like you need to get them to talk about the trauma. That isn't necessarily the best thing. They have to trust you first. And people who've been through trauma, they don't trust. And they have good reasons. Okay? Some people have really been betrayed in their life. They've been misled. They've been lied to repeatedly. And that becomes a form of trauma. Sometimes people say, oh, that person, she just went through a divorce. No, you have no idea what kind of divorce that woman had to go through. Some things are really all that traumatic and all that difficult. So your first job, I think, as is having a level of compassion and concern and regard. Okay, you don't ask a person details that they don't offer up. You don't inquire. You don't try to get them to talk about it. Your job is just to help be present with them. Sit with them. Don't let them feel alone in the world. Be a support. Be unconditional. Okay, you might not agree with what they have to say, but do not disagree. Their experience is their experience, and their frame is their frame. But the first step in healing is being around people and environments that aren't caustic, that aren't aggressive, and that help them neutralize this fight or flight response that kind of blows up on them continuously at different points, so they can learn how to settle it down. You know, and I think with fight or flight, things like biofeedback are helpful too. It's like where you learn to regulate your blood pressure, things like that. All of these can help, but interpersonally is what heals. There's things that help and there's things that heal. And I do believe that healing comes from an interpersonal connection, an emotional validation. Validate, be present, assist, and support. Okay, these all matter to help a person walk through trauma and get through it. And as I said, these stats, at least 61% of men are going to walk through a traumatic event in their life, and 51% of women will also. And hopefully you don't get more trauma than that. But let's be mindful of, aware of people around us who may be experiencing a level of trauma, and how to assist and how to be present for them. Because that's what heals people, okay? Emotional regard, emotional validation, and some unconditional support. Go sit with them, be present with them, go try to get them to eat, but don't demand details, okay? That is earned, and not necessarily the healing part of the equation. And an interesting phenomena that also goes on with trauma is that providers can get traumatized just from listening to people's stories. Some people's stories are so graphic and so horrific. We call it vicarious trauma. And as providers, I've always had to gauge, you know, the types of clients I'm working with, because you can absorb that. And keeping in mind that trauma, although it can be an outside experience, the problem with it you have is there are people that can go through some horrific traumas and they still keep moving and they're fine. And there's other people who can experience a type of trauma and it just sets them back profoundly, or even a more subtler form of trauma. Why does that happen? Because it became internalized. Okay, they identified with it, they absorbed it. You don't want trauma to be absorbed. You've got to be able to kick it off as fast as you get it. And that's a lot easier said than done in certain situations. So I'm not going to say it's an easy process. It's an important process, though, because whatever you absorb, absorbs into your life. And that you cannot afford. So using different professional resources, interpersonal resources, and being mindful of the fact that there's different types of traumas that go on out there. And so just to be aware of that and understanding that there's genetic factors and there's epigenetics that you can actually alter the next generation from health to unhealth. And so trauma really needs a lot of hands-on with it. All right, I think I've covered this to the extent that I want to cover it. And so we'll close up on that. And before we close out, I'm going to say, if you like the style in which I present things, you might like my book, which is Bipolar is Not an STD. It's available on Amazon, and it talks about my work, my career work, with people with mood disorders, personality disorders, and also talks a bit about relationships. And the early part, before I start, has a little bit of personal misery in there. So somewhere along the line, you get some good information there. So I've enjoyed doing this podcast, and I look forward to having you back on another one. And I look forward to some topic ideas in terms of what people are interested in. And that is, you can send that to drlaurengoodall.com. Again, thank you for joining me.